To start, the SS quickly divided us according to sex, leaving all children under 14 with their mothers. So our once united group was straightway split in two. A feeling of dread overwhelmed us. But the guards replied to our anxious questions in a paternal, almost good-natured manner. It was nothing to be concerned about. They were being taken off for a bath and to be disinfected, as was the custom. Afterwards, we would all be reunited with our families. While they sorted us out for transportation, I had a chance to look around. In the light of the dying sun, the image glimpsed earlier through the crack in the boxcar seemed to have changed, grown more eerie and menacing. One object immediately caught my eye, an immense square chimney, built of red bricks, tapering towards the summit. It towered above a two-story building and looked like a strange factory chimney. I was especially struck by the enormous tongues of flame rising between the lightning rods, which were set at angles on the square tops of the chimney. I tried to imagine what hellish cooking would require such a tremendous fire. Suddenly I realized that we were in Germany, the land of the crematory ovens. I had spent 10 years in this country, first as a student, later as a doctor, and knew that even the smallest city had its crematorium. So, the factory was a crematorium. A little farther on, I saw a second building with its chimney, then, almost hidden in a thicket, a third, whose chimneys were spewing the same flames. A faint wind brought the smoke toward me. My nose, then my throat, were filled with the nauseating odor of burning flesh and scorched hair. Plenty of food for thought there. But meanwhile, the second phase of selection had begun. In single file, men, women, children, the aged had to pass before the selection committee. Dr. Mengele, the medical selector, made a sign. They lined up again in two groups. The left-hand column included the aged, the crippled, the feeble, and women with children under 14. The right-hand column consisted entirely of able-bodied men and women, those able to work. In this latter group, I noticed my wife and 14-year-old daughter. We no longer had any way of speaking to each other. All we could do was make signs. Interjection. If his daughter had been 13, if his wife and child had perished right then, would this record have been? And since I wrote that, I'm pretty convinced the answer is yes. Continuing. Those too sick to walk, the aged and insane, were loaded into Red Cross vans. Some of the elderly doctors in my group asked if they could also get into the vans. The trucks departed. Then the left-hand group, five abreast, flanked by SS guards, moved off in its turn. In a few minutes, they were out of sight, cut off from view by a thicket of trees. The right-hand column had not moved. Dr. Mengele ordered all doctors to step forward. He then approached the new group, composed of some 50 doctors, and asked those who had studied in a German university, who had a thorough knowledge of pathology, and had practiced forensic medicine to step forward. "Be very careful," he added. "You must be equal to the task, for if you're not," and his menacing gesture left little to the imagination. I glanced at my companions. Perhaps they were intimidated. What did it matter? My mind was already made up. I broke ranks and presented myself. Dr. Mengele questioned me at length, asking me where I had studied, the names of my pathology professors, how I had acquired a knowledge of forensic medicine, how long I'd practiced, etc. Apparently my answers were satisfactory, for he immediately separated me from the others and ordered my colleagues to return to their places. For the moment, they were spared, because I now must state a truth of which I was then ignorant, namely, that the left-hand group and those who went off in cars passed a few moments later through the doors of the crematorium, from which no one ever returned.